Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Americans prefer to think about life, not death. But more families are putting time and effort into crafting their final farewells. As a result, the funeral industry is changing as more people bypass traditional burial in favor of more personal, eco-friendly, and cheaper endings. Cremation continues to be popular, but there are newer options on the horizon, too. There's water cremation and human composting. Joining us now is Tanya Marsh, a senior associate dean at Wake Forest University's law school. She teaches the only course in the U.S. in a U.S. law school on funeral and cemetery law. She has a podcast devoted to the topic of death and has written several books. Welcome to All Sides, Dean Marsh.
Thank you so much.
So you've said that there isn't anything more universal than death, and that the law of human remains is. Is that a misunderstood and complicated thing? You know, it's there's everyone, you know, yeah, there's nothing more universal than death. Can you tell me about that?
Well, yes, that is a truism, right? And it sort of goes beyond the law. I mean, the law is just an attempt to organize human behavior and constrain or put social norms sort of in action, but death sort of goes beyond all of that, right?
Yeah. Well, and so laws related to human remains, why are they so misunderstood and complicated? I mean, is it just, does every state have something different? Is there no universal set law?
Yes, absolutely. So the law of human remains in the United States, and by that, I mean all the laws having to do with what do we do with bodies as of the time of death, and then you know, what are our choices? And then once we have a final disposition, particularly if that's in the ground, what are the rules about burials and cemeteries? And so sort of the whole gamut of, you know, deceased humans forever. Those are state by state laws, and they can vary a huge amount. So the thing that I've noticed is that people both assume there is more law on some topics than there actually is, like, oh, such and such activity is obviously wrong and must be banned by the law. Mm. And then sometimes it's not. Or there's a lot less law than they assume, right? So they don't realize that some choices that seem very appropriate to them are constrained in some way by the law. So we, in general, we don't have a very good understanding of the law, and we certainly don't appreciate how much the law varies from state to state.
And at some point in our history, someone decided that individuals cannot be responsible for burying their loved ones. Like it had to be a more is that a part of the law that you have to involve funeral homes or something like that?
Oh, so that's a great question. So this is one of those things where people suppose that what we see reflected in society must be driven by legal requirements. In mm-hmm. fact, it is very rarely required by any state that you have to use a funeral home, mm-hmm. but then the practical realities of arranging a funeral are sort of beyond most people today. Like we've lost the cultural understanding, the social understanding about how to accomplish that for ourselves. Mm-hmm. That being said, there's still many people in the United States who practice home funeral, home burial, do it all themselves without a funeral director. But you know, for many of us, especially living in the cities, it's not really a task that we can undertake without some sort of training and education. But in the vast majority of states, you're not legally required to have a funeral director, but most states have now adopted an electronic death registry solution, which, and everybody, when there's a death, you have to file a death certificate with the state, right? And a funeral director or person acting as such needs to sign off on that. But if a state has adopted an electronic death registry system, you and I don't have access to that, right? So we're required to file a death certificate. Technically, we could do it without the involvement of a funeral director, but in reality, you have to go to a funeral director in order to file that certificate that's required.
And for a long time, most people were not cremated and everyone was buried in the ground. We'll get into cremation in a minute, but are there laws about burying, like, or is that just a misconception of mine too, where you have to have paid for a plot and be put in a particular place?
So there are state laws that restrict the methods of disposition that are legally available to you in a particular state. So you may be restricted, for example, to cremation or burial. If you choose burial, then there are some laws that may pertain to that, but the vast majority of restrictions on burial are really cemetery rules, right? So now, effectively, if all the cemeteries have the same rules, it doesn't matter to us, the consumer, whether it's a law that's restricting our behavior or cemetery rules, right? It's still a restriction on our behavior, regardless of where it originated. But we do often confuse the difference between a law and just a rule that all the cemeteries have adopted.
Well, if I own like a lot of land, and because I've heard of like family cemeteries being, you know, in very large backyards or on farms and that kind of thing, am I allowed to just hire a backhoe to dig me a hole and I can do that by law?
So, as a general rule in the United States, you can bury a body on any land where you have legal permission to do it. And the main constraint on backyard burials in most of the United States is zoning. So, within the city of Columbus, you're not going to be able to bury a body in the backyard. But if you get out into a county that doesn't, outside of a town, there's no zoning law that's constraining what you can do on your land, then absolutely you can set up a family cemetery or a backyard burial.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about funerals and how to make your plans with Wake Forest University law professor Tanya Marsh. So let's talk about cremation, because now that seems to be increasingly a more preferred method of burial in the United States. Is that true? Why has cremation displaced traditional burials?
Sure. So cremation was first legalized in the United States like the 1870s, 1880s. And 100 years later, the cremation rate was still under 5%. But last year in the United States, the cremation rate was about 62%. So within the last 50 years, we have seen an atmospheric rise in the level of cremation. And that has largely displaced casket burial because those are the two sort of predominant methods of disposition in the United States. So why? So there's a bunch of reasons why, and there's been some studies into that. I think our instinctive answer is, oh, it's because cremation is much less expensive. And for some families, that's certainly a big part of it. But I think the other key attractive aspect of cremation is the flexibility that it gives people. So you're not tied to a tight timeline anymore as you would be if you have an open casket viewing in a funeral home, and then the body's going to be buried in a few days. If that's your situation, people tend to have memorial services very quickly. And if you have a lot of out-of-town family and friends, that can be logistically very difficult. So if a cremation is followed by a memorial service at a later time, you can still have the family and friends there, but you have the leisure of more time in order to arrange things. The second thing is that if you're going to bury a body in a cemetery or even in your backyard, there's sort of an idea that you need to have a tie to that place, right? That needs to be a meaningful place. And we still have this, maybe it's a hopeful idea that people will come back and visit us after we're buried in the ground. But with cremation, you don't have to be tied to a place. So for families that are real mobile and have members, scattered across the United States or the world, you can divide up cremains, right? You can have each of the adult children can take back an urn with a portion of the remains. You can scatter them in different meaningful places. There's just a lot more opportunities for memorialization with cremation.
When I think back to the idea of a cemetery and visiting someone at their where their headstone is, my grandmother and my great grandparents were grave visiting people. They would visit regularly on birthdays, anniversaries, holidays, that kind of thing. But my parents never took us there, right? And I don't go visit my grandparents. So is it a generational thing? Has this idea of visiting a cemetery, is it waning?
Well, I think it is. There's some regional aspects to it, and there's also, you know, religious and ethnic. So it's very difficult to generalize, but yes, I would say that overall, there was a much greater emphasis on visiting burial places, sort of two generations ago, than there certainly is today. And part of that is because we have seen a huge displacement in population. Now, in parts of the country where people are in the same place that many generations of their family have been, I think you do still see much more of that traditional behavior and being tied to putting flowers on the graves in cemeteries. But if families have broken up and moved around, you just don't have that family tradition as much anymore.
If cremation is more popular now, and that's like the growing trend, what if someone has already purchased a burial plot? Can they give it back? Can you undo it?
So most cemeteries have a rule that's sort of a right of first refusal, because they don't want private sales undercutting the current sales of burial plots. So you have to offer to sell it back to the cemetery first. Or maybe you are only allowed to sell it back to the cemetery and you can't sell it in the private market. So people should really check the rules of the cemetery where they may have pre-purchased a plot to see what rules apply. So in some cases, you can't sell it at all except to the cemetery. In some cases, you know, you can go on eBay and Craigslist and find burial spots for sale, sometimes at reasonable prices.
Really? Interesting. Okay. Let's walk through some of the newer alternatives to burial and cremation. One is called alkaline hydrolysis. I'm not a chemist. Alkaline hydrolysis. It's also known as water cremation. Can you explain it?
Sure. So cremation is really flame cremation, of course, right? You put the body into a retort and heat it up to a high temperature for a long period of time. And then what's left are, charred bones and big chunks of bone, which are then crushed down in a machine called a cremulator into sort of an ash, right? And we refer to them as cremated remains or ashes. Okay, so water cremation, you're also taking a container, you're putting the body in there, but instead of adding flame, you're putting water in with, and they call it alkaline hydrolysis because it's a very alkaline, that is on the base acid scale, it's a very base solution. You're applying some pressure. You can apply heat, but you don't have to apply heat. It just speeds up the process. After a couple of hours, depending on the machine and, you know, the conditions and everything, all the little fleshy bits are gone. And what's left is really softened bone, which is not dissimilar to what's left after a flame cremation. And then those chunks of bone are crushed down in a cremulator. And what you're left with is a very fine white powder. It's much finer than what you'd be left with flame cremation. So the proponents of water cremation like it because it has about the same time frame. You have the same flexibility with what you can do with the product that's left over after the process, but it's much less environmentally impactful. So flame cremation consumes carbon because you need to consume energy in order to create the flame to burn a human body. And water cremation does not use the same kind of energy in order to accomplish essentially the same thing.
Interesting. Okay. And then I also mentioned earlier human composting. I'm guessing it involves a bit more than the way we compost food in our backyard bins.
Well, it's the same exact process, though. Again, just like with flame cremation, water cremation, you have a chamber, place the body in there. This time, though, we're not using water or flame. We're using the natural bacteria that exist in the world. So they take a lot of plant matter, like alfalfa, some sort of filler material, place the body in that. And then the natural bacteria, they're really closely monitoring the heat that is generated by that bacteria and then the oxygen levels that are inside this container to maximize the composting process. And it takes about 90 days. There's also, again, going to be large chunks of bone because, our heads are thick and we have big leg bones, and these things just take time, regardless of what the process is. So there's going to be some crushing of bone at near the end of that process too. But at the end of the composting process, which again is going to take several months as opposed to several hours, you're left with about a pickup truck bed full of compost. And that compost is not recognizably human in any way, right? It's just like the compost that you'd have at the end of any regular composting process.
Okay. And are these two newer ways, water cremation and human composting, are they legal everywhere?
So, alkaline hydrolysis, water cremation is legal in about 27 states right now. It's not offered by practitioners in all 27 states, but it is legal there. And natural organic reduction, which only became legalized for the first time 6 years ago, is now legal in 13 states. But the legalization is pretty far in front of people actually being able to offer it. So, you can only really get it right now in Washington State and Colorado, but I believe the plans are to open facilities. Facilities within the next year in California and Maryland.
Because you have to have a place to keep the body for 90 days, right? So that's, yeah,
Well,
right.
you need to have a licensed practitioner in any of these cases. You can't just cremate a body yourself in your backyard, right? You got to go to a funeral director that offers cremation. The same is true for the other two methods as well.
There's been a lot of emphasis on green burials. I hear about that a lot, whether it's getting a casket that breaks down more quickly or, but which of all the methods we've talked about today, which is considered the most eco-friendly?
Oh, that's a good question. I think you would have proponents of different methods sort of arguing that out. I'd say the last two standing in terms of the greenest method would be composting and green burial. And I would give the slight edge to composting because green burial and composting are essentially the same process. They're just different time horizons for how long it happens. But what you have left over at the end of composting is compost that you can put anywhere. And what you have at the end of green burial is still land that's dedicated in perpetuity for burial purposes. So, yes, you have green space, but you've also taken land out of service to the living. And that is one of the sort of concerns about burial is that, if you have a cemetery there, you can't build affordable housing or farm or do any of the other things that we might want to do with that land.
We're talking with Tanya Marsh, a senior associate dean at Wake Forest University's Law School, and she is staying with us. And coming up, our conversation about funeral preparations continues. We're going to hear from the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Central Ohio. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour about death and how to plan final farewells as Americans continue to turn away from the traditional trappings of a formal religious funeral service, but how to navigate the endless decisions from who will carry out our wishes to should we prepay? To what laws need to be considered. Today, we're talking about funeral trends. And listeners, we'd love to hear from you this hour. Do you have a question about funeral planning? Or have you come up with a unique way to remember a loved one that you'd like to tell us about? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Still with us is Tanya Marsh, Senior Associate Dean at Wake Forest University's Law School. She teaches the only course in a U.S. law school on funeral and cemetery law. She's also the author of several books, The Law of Human Remains, and the co-author of Cemetery Law, The Common Law and Burying Grounds in the United States. Tanya, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And joining us now is Kathy Elkins with the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Central Ohio. It's an all-volunteer group with about 1,500 members, and it's affiliated with the National Funeral Consumers Alliance. Welcome to All Sides, Kathy.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate being here.
So, Dean Marsh, I wanted to ask about consumer preferences changing and the changing of the funeral home industry at a national level. We've read about funeral homes closing and consolidating. Are you seeing that in your studies?
Yes, absolutely. Consolidation is definitely occurring. The same generational bump that you see across every industry is also happening in funeral homes. About 80% of funeral homes in the United States are still family owned. And it's baby boomers, frankly, that are the family owner, right? So most of them, it is a man who has inherited the business from his father, who had inherited the business from his grandfather. And in those three generations, we have seen just tremendous changes in the industry. So the question then is, who are they going to pass the business on to? More than 50% of the people graduating from mortuary school right now are women, and I think 70 to 80% of them do not come from a funeral family, which means they're not in a position to inherit a business from a person who's about to retire. If they're going to take over, they're going to have to purchase the business. That will cost a lot of money, that most of these folks just graduating from mortuary school or who have been employees for some years don't have. And so the most obvious exit plan for many of these baby boomers who are looking to retirement is to sell to another larger group and consolidate.
And Kathy, how are you seeing changes playing out here in Central Ohio? Do we have funeral homes consolidating, closing, changing?
Yes, indeed we do. I mean, in the Clintonville area where I live, three funeral homes have closed. Now, around the city, funeral homes have consolidated, and that sometimes can provide problems, but we can maybe get into that a little later. Mm-hmm. But our program, Funeral Consumers Alliance of Central Ohio, was started back in the 1950s with Jessica Midford's book, The American Way of Death, which it was a bestseller in the 50s, and it portrayed the egregious practices of the funeral industry. Now, they've come a long way, but there's a ways to go since then. Jessica Midford wrote a follow-up in the 90s and acknowledged that much progress had been made.
What were some of the egregious things that you mentioned? What were they doing?
They were just, they had like a monopoly on charging whatever they wanted to. Mm. And there was no way of comparing prices. And every price was high, and they had ways of showing caskets so that you were encouraged to, oh, your mom was so wonderful, you want to do right by her, so you want this kind of casket for her, playing on the emotions. And maybe the family had a lot of trouble coming up with that much money. So that's part of what started the funeral. It was the Memorial Society back then. Mm-hmm. And it started in Unitarian churches and Quaker meeting houses. And it grew quite vociferously. There are not that many affiliates today, but Columbus has a very active one. We've got a couple of missions. One is to educate people about the funeral industry and to encourage them to make their plans as adults and older adults, make their plans early, not necessarily pay for them, but make their plans, sign them, get them notarized, and have copies available to family members.
So, Kathy, yes. being involved in the like the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Central Ohio. I mean, it's an all volunteer group, but what got you involved in it? Why did you decide to be a part of this?
Okay, very good. That was 1998 is, I think, when I got involved, and I was part of the Unitarian Church, and some of the leadership, not all of the leadership, was from that church. And those people were friends of mine and encouraged me. And someone asked me, if you put out a general, come on and do this, that might work, but being asked to do something. And whatever I was asked to do, I was able to do, and then got involved and more involved. And now I'm past president, but now I'm membership secretary. Mm-hmm. So we have a telephone call. We have a telephone, 614-263-4632. And I get the phone calls, and people are calling for information, or we do not have money to help people with funerals, but being a retired social worker, when I get these calls, I talk to them at length. Well, kind of what is the situation? What have you tried? And our website has a survey of funeral home prices that they can look at. Or I tell them, be a savvy shopper. You know, if you're going to buy a refrigerator, you're going to shop around. Well, call different funeral homes. Get their prices. Mm-hmm. Now, there are regulations from the federal government through the funeral rule. And the funeral rule mandates that every funeral home must hand out their price list if you ask for it. Now, today, many of them will mail them to you, or it's online, too, for many of them. Another thing we do is monitor the funeral industry. So in most states, perhaps not all, in most states, there is a board that monitors the funeral industry. In Ohio, it's the Board of Embalmers and Funeral Directors. Mm-hmm. Since it is a state board, they allow citizens to come. So I am a citizen there every month, the third Wednesday, not monitoring, but watching what they're doing. And I can say that they're very good about... Well, it's made up of funeral directors and embalmers and two citizens. Mm-hmm. My feeling is they do a good job of getting rid of the bad players in their industry.
Now, Tanya, let's bring you back into the conversation. Have you heard about this over the years where people don't understand how much a funeral should cost? Sometimes costs are hidden, and things that Kathy was mentioning about guidance and pricing. Have you covered that?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I mean, you know, funeral consumers are in a fairly unique position because we don't, in general, as Americans, do a lot of funeral pre-planning. I try and encourage that, as I know Kathy does and the Funeral Consumers Alliance does, for everyone to at least figure out what their options are and start talking to their family about what they might want to consider. We can talk about the steps for pre-planning, but most people don't do that at all. And so it's only in a crisis situation that they have to call a funeral home. The studies have shown that most consumers only call one funeral home, so they don't do the kind of shopping around and price checking that Kathy was recommending, which is a very good idea. But you're in a situation of grief, or there's an impending death, it's a crisis. We're not making great decisions at that moment. And especially if we are uninformed consumers, we can make some choices that we would not have made if we had the benefit of time and space and more knowledge.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And what brought up this topic, kind of the reason that we're talking about this today, is I recently attended the funeral of my grandmother. She was 91 years old, lived an amazing life, but she wanted a very traditional Roman Catholic funeral service and burial. Everything was very traditional. But it got me talking to my parents, and I found out that's not what they wanted. They didn't want they didn't want this traditional Roman Catholic mass type of funeral. And it, but being at one brought up the conversation, right? So, Kathy, do you talk to people about the need to have these conversations before it's an emergency?
Oh my heavens, yes, yes. That's exactly what we try to do, and. In addition to our, we do presentations at senior centers, at community groups, libraries, around Central Ohio. There are two Funeral Consumers Alliance affiliates in Ohio, Cleveland, which is the Memorial Society. They didn't change their name, and the one Central Ohio. Mm-hmm. So we travel around Central Ohio doing presentations. And talking to people about making their plans ahead of time. If people don't realize that their powers of attorney for medical care, for instance, ends when they die. So what happens to who's in charge of the body? Well, the state of Ohio has a plan for that. It's the spouse, if the spouse is living, the children, but all the children have to agree. So if you've got two or three or five children, to get them to agree, you know, some families, one child goes one way, another the other way, to get them to agree is sometimes difficult. But there is a state form that a person can fill out ahead of time naming the person who is in charge of their bodily remains. Mm. And it either, and I encourage people to always have that notarized. And that settles that. That's one of the pre-planning documents that we give people, because we are also a membership organization. You mentioned 1,500 people in our group. The cost of membership is $40 for the rest of your life. Hmm. So we don't, we ask for donations because we are a 501c3. We're not making any profits. And for your membership, you get two newsletters, which is quite costly to mail out. Usually I have an article or two in the newsletter, and it's about information that people hopefully find interesting, mm-hmm. plus an annual meeting in May.
And when we were researching this, the Ohio Funeral Directors Association website has a tab that says, "Have the talk." There are no rules for how to have the talk with a loved one, only that you make the time to do it. And yet, Tanya, you mentioned getting into that idea of pre-planning your funeral. It's, you know, we mentioned at the beginning of the show, most Americans don't like to talk about death, but how important is it to have the talk?
Right. So we're a very death ignorant society. Sure. And so, you know, most people don't know what their options are. We talked about at the beginning, most people make wrong assumptions about how much the law requires us to do or doesn't allow us to do. And so it is really important for people to first get some level of education and then just to normalize talking about end of life sort of planning questions. I mean, this is really kind of part of a bigger issue, right? We're just talking about funeral planning right now, but you need to have a talk with your loved ones about what happens if I have a catastrophic accident and I'm on life support and I have no meaningful hope of recovery, right?
Exactly.
We don't talk about those issues as much too. So I really think it needs to be part of a whole conversation about what's important to us, what's not important to us, how much do we want to sort of dictate. You know, many people just don't care what happens to their remains, but they don't want their loved ones spending a lot of money on it, right? And they don't associate showering funeral planning with money as a show of love. So if that's your feeling, you just need to communicate that.
Couldn't agree more. Exactly.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about making plans for your funeral with Dean Tanya Marsh from the Wake Forest Law School and Kathy Elkins with the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Central Ohio. Listeners, we'd like you to join us this hour. Do you have questions about funeral planning, or have you come up with a unique way to remember a loved one? You can tell us about it. Give us a call, 614-292-9000. 8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And coming up, we are going to talk about some of those different ways people are personalizing their final farewells. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour about death and how to plan for final farewells as Americans continue to turn away from the traditional trappings of a formal religious funeral. Still with us is Dean Tanya Marsh, Senior Associate Dean at Wake Forest University's Law School. She teaches the only course in a U.S. law school on funeral and cemetery law. She also has a podcast devoted to the topic of death and has written several books. Tanya, thanks again for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Kathy Elkins with the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Central Ohio, an all-volunteer group with about 1,500 members. Thanks for being here, Kathy.
Well, thank you.
And listeners, we'd like to hear from you. If you have a unique way of remembering a loved one you'd like to tell us about, or if you have funeral planning questions, you can call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we do have Margaret in Granville. Margaret, what is your question?
Yes, hi. Thank you so much. And my question, very related to the topic that was just happening about the need to have those end-of-life conversations, and unfortunately did not have that conversation with my father before he passed away unexpectedly this year. And there was no trust, no money to be had in the estate, and many debtors coming forward and things of that nature. And so I'm just wondering if there are any resources in the state of Ohio for families in my situation. I can't imagine, we're the only ones. And of course, you hope to be able to use emergency savings and things like that. But even simple cremation is quite expensive. And so just wondering if there are any resources for families in this situation.
Yeah, Kathy, do you have resources for people who did not have anything planned?
Well, that's an excellent question, and it's a question I get very, very often on our telephone line. People calling to see if there are resources, and the thing we have in Franklin County is Catholic Social Services through their JOIN program. Will provide $100 toward a funeral, which is very minimal. Now, when I mention that to people, they sometimes say, oh, well, they offered me $200. Well, and I don't know the difference, but that is the only source I know of. Impact used to help with this, but they have no longer doing that. My recommendation, as I've talked to people at length, if the person is at the funeral home and they've signed a contract, they're kind of tied into that contract. And I encourage people, just talk to the funeral home, let them know the financial situation, and ask them to help them lower whatever cost they can do. For instance, if they want a memorial for that person, well, don't do it at the funeral home. Have a potluck. Have it at church, if there's a church, or have it at your home. Have people over where they'll talk about the deceased person in a humorous way, in a loving way. Mm-hmm. There are ways to discuss with a funeral director to cut back on some of the services. There is no law that a person must be embalmed. That could be a savings. In our program, if a person is a member of our program, we do have two funeral homes that give a reduced price to our members. And sometimes a funeral home will let you, if a person being cremated, they'll let you view the remains before cremation without embalming. Mm-hmm. That's an option.
All right, then let's bring Tanya into the conversation. So are you aware, is the idea of not being able to afford to pay for a funeral a nationwide problem? And do some states do it better than others to help people pay for it?
It's absolutely a national problem. So the yes. median cost of a full service funeral with viewing and burial, excluding the cost of a burial plot and a tombstone, is about $10,500 across the country. That's an enormous amount of money for many families, whether you've pre-planned or not. That's an enormous amount of money. A direct cremation is typically the lowest cost option that families can control. And you can typically get that for about $1,000 max in most parts of the country, but it can vary as well. Another option that is available to people that is, I don't know how well it's communicated or whether people really want to do it or not, but you can quote unquote donate your body to science.
Right.
And there's two paths to doing that. One is through a university anatomical donation program. Those typically require you to sign up in advance, and then the university will cremate the remains when they're finished and return them to the family. The other is through technically nonprofit, so-called body brokers, who are providing human remains for a variety of scientific and medical purposes. And then they will typically promise to cremate the remains when they're finished and return them to the family. So those are both options that are at no cost to the family. Right. One of them requires a lot of coordination in advance, and university programs don't take all remains that are offered to them because they just have restrictions. There's not a lot of public funding support that would allow a family to make disposition decisions, and yet the government is providing funds for those private decisions. But at the end of the day, if the estate has no money and the family has no money, and no one claims the remains, the government will pay for the cremation, or in some jurisdictions, the burial of that person. It's just they are unlikely to return the remains to the family in those cases.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking with Dean Tanya Marsh, a senior associate dean at Wake Forest University's Law School, and Kathy Elkins with the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Central Ohio. Listeners, if you'd like to join us, have you come up with a unique way to remember a loved one that you'd like to tell us about? 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Also, if you have any tips on paying for funerals, you can give us a call and join the conversation. Families and funeral homes are finding different ways, more novel ways, to remember people who are gone. Kathy mentioned having a picnic or a potluck rather than having the service at the funeral home. That's a way to save money. But also, it's what to do after you have your loved one cremated, what to do with the ashes. I wanted to play some audio we received from a company that can convert someone's ashes into hard stones. Here is Mick Zazon, a content creator from Ohio, who's sharing the experience of losing her father suddenly and how her family decided to memorialize him.
Basically, they take your loved one's ashes and they make them into stone. It's this super intricate process. They're very hard, they're very rockish. They are rocks, which is crazy. Also, they are smooth. So if you have anxiety and you like having a smooth stone to rub to soothe, my mom carries one with her to rub throughout the day.
So those are called parting stones. And she says that she also said that unlike the powder from ash, the rocks can be tossed into water without worrying about the ashes blowing back on you and that kind of thing. Tanya, have you heard about different things people do with the ashes? Since more and more people are being cremated, I think there's more and more businesses popping up of what to do with those ashes and those remains.
Yeah, I love parting stones. They're beautiful. They're actually mixing them with ceramics, so they're pretty cool. You can also take ashes or the remains from alkaline hydrolysis. You can create fake gems, so like fake diamonds. And people have made all ranges of jewelry with them. They're very easy to mix with molten glass and create glass art. And you can have a keepsake on your desk from a loved one. There are companies that will mix cremated remains with paint and paint a portrait of the person who is departed. There's all kinds of things that you can do with this material and memorialize in a variety of ways, which we were talking about before, the flexibility of cremation. These are all sort of just the sky's the limit in terms of the creativity of what you can do to memorialize a loved one.
And something that I have read about, and I'm not sure it's true, it's one of those things that you just read and you never know. Are you allowed to, you hear about a lot of people tossing ashes into the ocean or into a lake. Are you allowed to do that technically?
So the general rule is that you can spread cremated remains on any private property with the consent of the landowner. And then there's some national parks and state parks where you can spread them without cost. In water, the laws of the states that have a water boundary are going to vary. What they're concerned about is they don't want it just washing back up, right, onto the shore. So typically you can spread them on water, but you need to do it out a ways. I should also, if I can mention real quickly, my almost daughter-in-law had a family member pass away recently. They loaded his cremated remains into shotgun shells, and then blew up some fireworks with this. So they sort of spread him via firework and shotgun shell. So
So,
that's an unusual method as well.
Kathy, have you heard of more interesting ways in recent years in order to what to do instead of having a traditional funeral, what to do with remains?
Well, I'm certainly making the jewelry is one I have heard of. But let me make a mention about the alkaline hydrolysis.
That's the water cremation.
That's the water cremation. That is not currently, according to, there's no law. There's a law against it. I mean,
It's not legal in
it's not,
Ohio.
that's, thank you. It's not legal in Ohio. But it was legal for a time, and there was a funeral home that did 10 or 11 of them, and he then was stopped by the state of Ohio. But I do believe, we need always to look at what is the future going to be. And I think alkaline hydrolysis is something that in the future will be very, very popular. Now, my understanding, and I could be corrected on this, my understanding is what does Ohio State University do with their cows and pigs when they die? It's alkaline hydrolysis. That's what they do. And it's basically hot water, but not hot as cremation, burning a body. And it takes the flesh off of the animal. And then, well, they add something like lye to the hot water. And then once the flesh is off of the bones, they put the bones like in a blender and you've got cremains. That's animals. Well, my personal feeling is that's going to be the thing that will take over cremation, because cremation has a lot of downsides environmentally. Alkaline hydrolysis does not.
Yeah, Tanya, have you mentioned earlier that I think you said it was 27 states the water cremation is legal. So do you feel, is it something that's just not universally allowed at the moment, but maybe someday?
There's definitely a trend to legalizing alkaline hydrolysis. Alkaline hydrolysis has a real benefit over natural organic reduction in that a funeral home can just buy one unit and integrate it into their operation. Whereas with NOR, you need sort of economies of scale in order to operate the facility because it takes so much longer with natural organic reduction or composting. However, I've been doing surveys of consumer preferences with respect to methods of disposition, national surveys for the last couple of years. the level of interest in alkaline hydrolysis is very low. The interest in green burial and natural organic reduction is skyrocketing, but the interest in alkaline hydrolysis, which has been around for a couple of decades, is still pretty low. So it'll be interesting to see, what the future holds.
And we got an email from Karen who just wanted to comment that her parents' bodies were donated to science and that the university even had a service to honor them. But Karen said she did not do it for a cost benefit. She did it to support science. So is that? But Tanya, you're saying it can be a cost benefit as well.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, there's no cost to donate your remains to a university anatomical gift program, but people do it for a whole variety of reasons. And most of them are doing it to support the university and support medical science.
You need a plan B, however, because you might have filled out all of the appropriate paperwork to do that, but the school might not need the body at that time, or there might be a disease in the body that they can't use. There are several reasons that they might not be able to take the body. It's maybe the minority of the cases, but it's good to have a plan B.
All right. So I think the moral of the story here is to pre-plan, have the talk.
Absolutely.
Don't be afraid to talk about death. And then if you have a plan, you might need a plan B. All right. We've been talking about funeral planning and how people plan for death and make funeral arrangements in new ways. Thank you to Dean Tanya Marsh, Senior Associate Dean at Wake Forest University's Law School. Tanya, thank you for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Kathy Elkins with the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Central Ohio. Kathy, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. This was very, very informative.
And you've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jarovich.